KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I am from Livermore.
I'm from East Oakland.
Oakland, near Lake Merritt.
Alameda, California.
I'm in the Excelsior neighborhood.
Cambridge, Massachusetts, but I grew up in Sonoma County.
Coming up, long-term nursing care is getting harder to find in expensive urban areas.
People will get sent far away from their homes, their families, and their other social networks when they're sent to a nursing home.
Then, what's in the name of a new muni station in San Francisco's Chinatown?
Rose never stabbed anyone in the back. She stabbed him in the front.
The backstory of the Chinatown Rose Pack Station. And we'll meet a guy in prison who started a spiritual group based on Superman.
How could I, a human being, get as close as possible to this super being?
Wisdom from the planet Krypton. You'll hear it all today on Cross Currents. Many people living in nursing homes are forced to live far away from their loved ones. Advocates warn this is the reality for seniors and their families looking for nursing care as the number of affordable nursing home beds shrinks. The problem is linked in part to the cost of doing business and to the cost of living and working in the Bay Area. And California is aging. The senior population is expected to nearly double by 2030. This week, in a three-part series, KALW's Laura Wenis reports on the crisis in nursing care. Today's story, why it can be so hard to find long-term nursing care in expensive urban regions like right here in the Bay Area.
So we'll go up to my room first. We'll go to the room first, and then we'll give you a tour.
Okay.
Bernice Palmer is showing me her room at the nursing home where she's lived for 2 years. She's now 102.
He's a volunteer. That's her computer.
Isn't he handsome? He was my instructor. I should have pretended that I understood. I should have pretended to talk and keep the lessons up.
We're at the San Francisco campus for Jewish Living, formerly known as the Jewish Home.
I have a nice view of a tree here. I like that tree.
To someone who hasn't been in a nursing home before, it feels almost like a dorm room, tight but comfortable. There's her keyboard for practicing piano, a TV stacked on top of a desk, pictures taped to the big closet door. But the bed is a hospital bed, and there's a nurse's station down the hall and a call bell in the room. Bernice Palmer's daughter Terry Palmer tells me the campus is one of the best nursing homes in the city. There are activities nearly every day, and we talk in a cafe that's downstairs, where her mom has a tab she can charge coffee and pastries to. She's still able to walk around on her own.
She's very proud of the fact that she's
married. Well, it's impressive.
Three women my son's age are in wheelchairs.
They're a little bit older than we are.
She's lucky to have this room.
The reason the bed was available was because there was a roommate that liked to watch TV all night. But my mother is very deaf, and we both agreed that that wouldn't be a problem. And it did turn out actually to be somewhat of a problem. But my mother was able to tolerate it, and we put her on the waiting list for a private room. And after a year at the Jewish home, she got a private room. And she's happy as a clam right now.
Getting a space here was probably a lucky break. The nursing home beds in California are mostly full most of the time, and that's been the case for years. Another obstacle is the cost. Nearly 20% of California seniors live in poverty. But even for someone who has assets, nursing care is expensive. Around $100,000 a year in the Bay Area, more than the median individual person in San Francisco makes in a year.
A lot of the small residential care facilities that would be run by a family, you know, a six-bedroom house that'd be run by a family. The property is worth so much now. When they retire, they sell the house and they go out of business. And so in San Francisco, for instance, which is an expensive world-class city, we've got a shortage of Medi-Cal nursing home beds and we've got a shortage of small residential care facilities.
Nursing homes get paid less, generally speaking, for patients who stay long-term than for people who just need short-term rehabilitation. So advocates say it's especially hard to find long-term care, which is for people who won't likely be able to manage things like eating and hygiene on their own, or who need an intensive degree of medical care indefinitely. Providers say it's due to a lack of capacity, and that at any given time, the majority of beds in nursing homes are occupied by long-term patients. I spoke with Deanne Walters, Director of Clinical Affairs for the California Association of Health Facilities.
Currently, we are probably one of the highest utilized beds across the United States. And so most of our facilities run in the 80% occupied area.
The association represents nursing facilities across the state. Walters says that because, by definition, long-term patients don't move out as quickly, that limits space available for additional long-term patients. Plus, younger people are now needing nursing homes more often.
And so with the increase in the senior population and the fact that more people have access to skilled nursing care even before they become seniors, then we were definitely going to see an impact on availability for anyone. We see it in some areas right now where it's very difficult to get a bed, and so that will only increase as the population increases.
And rather than growing to accommodate an aging population, she says nursing home capacity is actually shrinking.
There are not more beds being added at this point in time. It is quite a challenge for operators to build new skilled nursing facilities because of the regulation, the time that it takes to get certified, and just the cost that goes into it. So we don't see a lot of new buildings being built. In fact, it's really slow, and we see more where buildings are being taken offline because they are older in a lot of cases, and so they don't meet current standards, and so then some facilities are actually closing.
In the Bay Area especially, Liz Halifax, who has always specialized in nursing care, sees a crisis brewing. She volunteers with the local long-term care ombudsman program.
And we are there to visit patients, residents that are there, and check in with them to make sure everything's going well. And if it isn't going well...
Halifax works as a gerontological nurse researcher at UCSF. She warns that in impacted areas like around San Francisco, the only option for someone needing nursing care may be at a distance.
You know, so I'm 58 now. So in 10 years' time, when this crisis is really at its worst and I need a nursing home bed, the likelihood of me getting a bed within, you know, 5 miles of my home is going to decrease quite dramatically. And it's possible that I'd be sent out of county or even out of the Bay Area, as the issue is pretty much the same in the Bay Area, to go to a nursing home, which would obviously cause a lot of isolation from my family and my social circle.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services estimates that about a third of seniors nationwide get care at a nursing facility at some point, and that the average stay is about a year. As the shortage builds, according to Liz Halifax,
people will get sent far away from their homes, their families, and their other social networks when they're sent to a nursing home.
A lack of capacity in places like the Bay Area can make the task of finding good, long-term care for a fragile senior extremely daunting. In San Francisco, I'm Laura Wenes for CrossCurrents.
Laura's series on accessing nursing home care in California continues tomorrow. In part two, what an insurer pays can affect the difficulty of finding care.
It really should not be this hard, and the sector is not about care, it's about cost. And we came to learn that.
That's tomorrow on Cross Currents. This series is produced as part of the USC Center for Health Journalism's California Fellowship. Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News, I'm Ben Trefney in for Hana Baba. We'll stay in San Francisco for this next story. Chinatown's political powerhouse Rose Pak passed away 3 years ago, but that hasn't stopped her from causing controversy. The San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency just named the new Muni station in Chinatown after her. KALW's Jocelyn Tabankai brings us into the controversy behind this decision.
The SFMTA meeting in August, where the Chinatown Rose Pak station name was affirmed, lasted over 8 hours. That was after months of long meetings debating whether or not the new station on Stockton Street should bear Rose Pak's name. To give you a feel of the debate, here's a Pak supporter speaking.
I'm a part of a movement of young women of color who are being politically active because of Rose Park. Everybody here knows who Martin Luther King is, who Cesar Chavez is. Rose Park is our leader, our person who made our community possible and without whom housing development would have run us out of town. There would be no hospital, no subway without her contribution and her sacrifices.
And here's a Chinatown resident arguing against naming the station after Peck.
She's too controversial. The people who liked her were her friends. Even though she was a bit bully, we will be extremely sad and offended to see her name associated with the Chinatown Central subway station. We try to forget about her and past. Please don't bring back the disturbing memory while we take subway or walk by the station. So, no Rose Park.
No Rose Park.
No Rose Park.
To understand why the name of a muni station could cause so much trouble, you need to understand Rose Park. She was born in China in 1948 and immigrated to San Francisco at the age of 16. From the 70s until she died in 2016, she lobbied nonstop in San Francisco in Chinatown politics. And she had no problem offending people in the process. Here's Pak at the Chinese New Year Parade in 2012 roasting District Attorney George Gascon.
Under the DA's crotch. And then we also have the sheriff coming. So I really like to light the firecrackers under them.
At the time, the DA was investigating alleged shady dealings in the Pak-controlled campaign for former Mayor Ed Lee. The DA eventually dropped the case, citing insufficient evidence. She certainly had a thing for explosive comments. Here's another one from an interview on KQED.
You know, I call him Taliban because he sabotaged and blocked, you know, a lot of projects and community projects, I call it, in our neighborhood. And then he had the audacity to show up at one of them.
From this comment, you might think that Supervisor Aaron Peskin did something really bad, but Peck called him out for opposing a parking lot development she supported. Ironically, over the years, Peck would get on Supervisor Peskin's good side, so much so that he's actually the one who proposed the Chinatown Rose Park station name. So despite her fiery tongue, or maybe because of it, she succeeded in things like fundraising for political campaigns and developing this new muni line leading to Chinatown.
Rose never stabbed anyone in the back. She stabbed him in the front.
This is Malcolm Young, the Deputy Director of Programs at Chinatown Community Development Fund.
You knew she was coming, and she never hid it. And I think that's a genuine form of leadership. Rose formed a unique political alliance that I'm not sure exists anywhere else.
Young met Pak over 10 years ago and remembers her as a community hero.
And it was an alliance between merchants and tenants. And, you know, that alliance and relationship has really held, you know, since 1987. And it's held through the common goal of making sure that Chinatown remains a vibrant immigrant gateway. And to me, that's Rose's most significant legacy.
One of her first successful undertakings was in the 1970s. Chinese Hospital, which serves many low-income and monolingual speakers, almost closed because of building safety regulations. For 3 years, she lobbied and fundraised to keep its doors open until finally Chinese Hospital was able to relocate to a new facility. In the 1980s, she gained a reputation for stopping gentrification. Throughout it all, Pak got really good at raising money and getting politicians to listen to her. Pak also dodged several lawsuits and investigations during her lifetime, including a 2001 FBI probe for affordable housing fraud. Many who oppose her still suspect her of corruption. I spoke with Pius Lee, chair of the Chinatown Neighborhood Association, who did not want the station to be named after her.
She did everything behind the scene, and she wanted to control everything by herself. I told all supporters she wanted to give back to the community.
He says she often went rogue. Pak worked constantly on projects of her choosing. She didn't like any official spotlight on herself unless it was on her own terms. Pak herself said she got too much credit for the station. Fast forward to 2019. Hundreds of Chinese Americans pour out to voice concerns at the SFMTA meetings. Some wait all day to speak. In August, as I sit through hours of heated testimony, it seems like the SFMTA board members are trying to feign interest, but as Pius Lee told me that day, it's clear they've already decided. After listening to all arguments, I'm still stuck asking myself, was she a community advocate or a neighborhood bully? A little of both?
Director Torres.
Aye.
Torres, aye. Director Rubke.
Nay.
Finally, Director, the board votes.
Aye, Mr. Chair. Directors, the ayes have it.
Here, here. Thank you very much.
But the controversy over Rose Pak and her legacy continues. Opponents of the station's name say they will put it up to a ballot measure next. But for now, the Chinatown Rose Pak station is set to open in 2020. For Cross Currents, I'm Jocelyn Tabankai in San Francisco.
Jocelyn reported that story as part of KALW's summer journalism training program. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. And now, a story from the Uncuffed team at Solano State Prison in Vacaville.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Today's story comes from Uncuffed producer Brian Mazza.
There is a cultural group in prison that is based on the mythology and morality of Superman. Its practitioners are called Kryptonians. DeAndre Hudson, also known as Steel Man Bizarro, founded the Kryptonians. Since he was a kid, he was captivated by the comic book hero, and since entering prison, has found a dozen members who he features in his comic books. In turn, these members, who are musicians, artists, and writers, have created their own style of dress, music, and a way of giving back to the community, all with Kryptonian flair. I'm reading all of this from the philosophies of our guest today, whose adoptive name is DeAndre Terrell Hudson. And how long have you been a Kryptonian?
As long as I remember, we'll say 1 year old. I've been striving to be the best that I can be. For me, what I saw was something unreal, something bigger than myself, and that was Superman. How could I, a human being, get as close as possible to this super being? I kept striving. Everything I did, I had to be the best. I practiced harder. I spent more time reading. I worked out more. I asked a million, gazillion, billion, thousand, trillion questions.
Right.
And I applied that.
You have a morning routine. What does it include for you on a daily basis?
Start off with meditation. You know, different people have a different understanding of what meditation is. For our Christian Kryptonians, their meditation is their prayer, their morning and nightly prayer. For our Buddhists, it's simply sitting in a lotus position and focusing. You know, you picture something that you have or that you want to have. You focus everything that you are on that one image, and you bring peace before you start your day.
For sure. It's kind of like it sets the tone.
Exactly.
Of the day.
Exactly.
Is it a religious order? How would you?
These are more of a philosophy. It's a way of thinking and living your life.
This is a movement here in Solano. Are there other guilds of Kryptonians in different prisons?
Yeah, we have them in different prisons on the street.
Really?
Yeah, we're on different yards here. We're represented on every yard in this prison.
Huh. What is Rao?
Rao is reaching ascended oneness. That is the ultimate human experience. Knowing who and what you are, living in that, accepting that, breathing that, and giving that.
You brought a couple of necklaces, and these got a sigil. Now, explain the L sigil. This is, it's not an S.
It's not.
Everybody thinks that S is for Superman. What is that?
So the S, Shireth, that's the Kryptonian word for hope. The House of El is the house of the optimist, house of chance and possibilities.
For people that, you know, might not know you or know of the Kryptonians, they might automatically assume that this is a gang. What do you have to say to people that think this is a gang?
You know, there has been a misconception because of the name. Not many people are familiar with comic books, so they hear Kryptonians. Right. All they really hear is Krypt.
Right.
And just keeping it straight.
Yeah.
I don't know any Crips that would spell a name with a K.
No. You know, they wouldn't put a K in there because that would probably not be a death sentence.
But, you know, it's really about what it says, Kryptonians.
Yeah. You have your own language. Can you speak Kryptonian to me?
Ramazan Bahra Duhan.
What did that mean?
May the light of Ra warm you.
It already has, man.
Kryptonian music. This that Kryptonian music. This that Kryptonian music. It's that Kryptonian music.
This music is by the Kryptonians at Solano State Prison. And that was Kryptonian DeAndre Hudson speaking with Brian Mazza. Brian's a producer for Uncuffed. KLW's work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. All content is approved by an information officer. Hear more stories like that on the Uncuffed podcast. Episode 1 drops next week. You could be one of the very first people to subscribe to Uncuffed in any podcast player. Do it right now.
This is rated CV for comic book violence.
Now it's time to turn our attention to the local music world. Let's hear from one of the bands in our area.
Hello, let's say a prayer for the homie that just came home, did time all on this lonely. I know it's hard getting back into the swing of things, checking that box on applications is what that life will bring.
But this is the Black Excellence Band from Oakland. They're performing at Cornerstone in Berkeley Wednesday night.
We all want to see you live another day. Come on, amen. Hello, let's say a prayer for the families that lost a loved one to a tragedy. I know it's hard to deal with when it don't make sense, so look around for someone you can vent to. You need it. I know you're trying to be strong, huh? Yeah, and do it all on your own, huh? Yeah, but remember you was there when I was down too. Probably wouldn't have made it through without you. I got you.
You gotta live your life that's full of joyless madness. You'll see that everything gets better. You gotta live a life that's gonna keep you happy. Then you'll see that everything is gonna.
Today's Crosscurrents team includes Sona Avakian, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Plachik, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wordshafter. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Crosscurrents, I'm Ben Trefney. Just so I see you though, won't write you out the books. You are appreciated, though we hardly show it.